Just a heads up, the Razzball Baseball Podcast might not be for all audiences. You have been advised. Hi, it's Nick. We're back for the second podcast of 2013. Now, some of you love the new format. You went crazy for it. Others were more, eh. So since my court-ordered therapist thinks compromise is a good thing, let's try this. We're going to still keep the show moving, work in some of our writers, but we're going to give you some more Rudy and Gray special time. We'll also pull back a little of the music when we're speaking to those guys. Sound good? Good. And if you don't like it, just remember, innovation has fueled products like Crystal Pepsi and the McDLT. Tom Jacks is going to take us through five key spring training position battles that are going to have an effect on key sleepers going into the season. I love position battles. She wants reverse cowgirl. You want splitting bamboo. What's wrong with that? Keeping with the Chicago theme this week, prospect guru Scott Ross is going to take a look at some key prospects that could have an early season impact. It's like trying to eye the new freshman talent at Frosh Week. We've also got a personal question from Gray, and I started playing Daily Fantasy at DraftKings.com, and it's wicked. Wicked. All that, plus Gray Albright and Rudy Gamble, now with 72% less music behind them. It's the Razzball Podcast for the week of March the 11th, 2013. Here we go. Okay, we're going to look at five great position battles happening this spring with Tom Jacks. It's kind of like when you're sitting in the middle seat of an airplane and you don't want to move your arm off the rest because then you're never getting it back. Only with baseball. By the way, Tom Jacks, if you were going to write a spy novel, wouldn't you name the spy Tom Jacks or Jack Tom, something like that? I don't know. That's what I'd do anyway. You can read Tom at Razzball.com, and you should especially read him if you play in OPS leagues. You can also follow him at VoteTomJacks on Twitter. Tom, what's your first great spring training battle this year?
Number one is Braves third baseman, which is Juan Francisco against Chris Johnson. Recently, Freddie Gonzalez said he would rather not have a platoon at third base, which is actually a sign that he cares about fantasy baseball. I'm strongly pulling for Francisco because he has tremendous power potential. Think maybe 20-plus home runs. That he's a better fielder also gives him an edge here.
All right, that's interesting. Give me number two.
Indian fifth starter, which is Daisuke against Trevor Bauer. I'm guessing that Francona sticks with Daisuke since he's experienced. Leaving fantasy owners craving Bauer's sweet, sweet upside. Although, I believe Bauer will be first in line.
So, we got to be rooting for Bauer here, right, Tom?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because I don't want to ever watch Daisuke again.
Yeah, you know, unfortunately, I think Francona might, but I think at some point it's inevitable that he gets the call.
At least Bauer's going to be young and sexy.
I think he will be, but, you know, that rotation has a lot of potential to have either injury or some just really bad performance by a guy. And, you know, should Bauer get the call, you know, the first couple months, I think he's immediately ownable in all mixed leagues. He's got potential to be pretty good right out of the gate.
All right, sounds good. What's number three on your list?
Yeah, number three is Rangers center fielder, which is Leonis Martin against Craig Gentry. Martin has the pedigree and has been tearing up spring training, so he's the front runner at this point. Gray said that he could be similar to Deaza if he could stop getting caught stealing. And, you know, I think he's got the speed to figure things out. And I do like Diaz as a good count for Martin.
Now, the only thing is, Martin has never swiped more than 19 bases in the minors or hit over 300. So what can we hope for if he wins the battle?
Yeah, you know, I think I really do believe in his speed. I know he's got the speed. even if he's a bit incompetent, to steal maybe 20. But I really think he'll figure things out. And I really could see maybe 25, even 30 bases should he, you know, start to improve on in that aspect a little bit. And that'll go along with maybe low double-digit home runs, maybe 10, 12. And I think it's a reasonable batting average, too. Maybe something like 270, 280, so something that won't hurt you.
All right, that's worth watching. What's the fourth battle you're looking at?
Yeah, the fourth one I'm looking at is Philly's right fielder, Dominic Brown, versus the world. And, you know, as my wife likes to call him, Demonic Brown, and I think that's relevant here because the Phillies have treated this guy like he's been possessed with something terrible over the past couple of seasons and have refused to play him. But I think this offseason, they've exercised those demons. And, you know, despite the Phillies having a crowded outfield, it looks like Mr. Brown has positioned himself to start by getting time in both left and right field. And with the full season at bat, I wouldn't be surprised to see his numbers resemble Jason Worth's. So, you know, like 15 to 20 home runs, maybe 10 stolen bases, and maybe 260, 270 batting average.
Okay, and what's the last battle, number five?
Yeah, number five is Dodgers' fifth starter, which is just this horrible mess that includes Chad Billingsley, Ted Lilly, the Harangutan, and Chris Capuano. You know, Billingsley appears to be the front runner, but I really don't trust his consistently high whip and last year's elbow problems. I'm betting that Ted Lilly, a.k.a. Serial Killer, as he's known to fans in Chicago, murdered the competition. And since coming to the NL in 2007, Lilly's been really good. He's averaged a 3.71 ERA and a 1.13 whip, which is useful in all leagues, in addition to his countless unsolved crimes.
Also, too, I think that that rotation of pitchers is also known as the burned-out Hollywood Starlet Taxi Squad. Tom, thanks so much for joining us. We're going to read you on Razzball.com.
Great, thanks.
Prospects. It's fresh meat versus the vets. Scott Evans is going to bring us prospects that could have an early season impact in 2013. You can read Scott at Razzball.com and follow him at r_ScottE. Might have to send that back out by Morse code. Man, Scott, that's the best you could come up with? Holy shit. Scott, give me the number one prospect on your list that could have a fantasy impact going into the season.
Number one on my list is Julio Teheran. He is having a great spring thus far. 12-2 K to walk. Only 9 innings pitched, and these spring numbers aren't hugely important, but he does seem to have a firm grasp on the number 5 spot in Atlanta's rotation. He had an off year last year, but I'm expecting big things from Teheran this year, and he should be a useful option right out of the gate.
Why was he so bad last year, Scott?
You know what? Atlanta was tweaking some mechanical things, trying to set him up for a better long-term success. So just naturally, with those tweaks, he had a little bit of a speed bump in his development, but I'm expecting his velocity to return and his effectiveness from 2011 to return as well.
Sounds good. Who's number two on your list?
Number two, Adam Eaton, outfielder for Arizona. He's looking like the leadoff man for the Diamondbacks. I mean, his opportunity is 100%, and, you know, with upside of 30-plus steals and maybe 10 or 15 homers, that could be useful.
Absolutely, no question. Who's number three on your list?
Number three is San Diego infielder Jet Jerko. He's actually a natural third baseman, but he's getting an opportunity at second base this season. He hasn't sealed the deal for the gig just yet, but new news as of the last few days of Logan Forsythe's plantar fasciitis kind of gives him a leg up on the competition, and Jerko could offer real good offensive statistics from second base.
He could actually be really interesting at second base because the position isn't deep this year. Let's say he plays really well. What's the upside there?
Upside for Jerko, I mean, I see 20 home run upside immediately. The guy is a polished hitter. There are some questions about ultimate ceiling, but for immediate this year, I mean, he could be a top-tier second baseman already.
And, of course, they've brought in the fences at Petco this year, so keep that in mind. Who's number four on your list?
Number four is a guy who has come out of nowhere this spring, Aaron Hicks, an outfielder from Minnesota. They traded away Ben Revere some other outfielders, and they have a slew of young guy options there. And I was thinking that it actually was going to be Oswaldo Arcia rising to the occasion and taking the center field opportunity, maybe even Joe Benson. But Aaron Hicks is coming off of a 5-home-run week in spring training, and he seems to have the edge on that center field job. He could be an exciting guy, stealing bases, hitting for power, and making outstanding plays in the outfield, too.
Yeah, he's very talented. I thought he was a couple years away, but it's a good point that you're making. Also, I think the fact that Minnesota is definitely in a rebuild, so why not let the young guys play if there's opportunity? Who's the fifth guy on your list?
Number five, Tyler Skaggs. Now, Skaggs is a guy who's trying to pitch away his opportunity at this point. The Diamondbacks want him to pitch in that number five spot, and he has kind of been garbage this spring. I know we don't want to make too much of the spring stats, you know, scouting reports coming from camp are still pretty strong. They say he's throwing the ball well, and I think he still has a grasp on the number five spot in the rotation. He's a top 20 prospect anywhere you look, so, you know, he's a high-impact guy.
Listen, I want to go off the board here for a second. I know we didn't talk about him in advance, but I'm curious. Give me an idea of what Oscar Tavares could do in St. Louis for this season, only because you could argue he might be the best pure-hitting prospect in the minors. A couple of the St. Louis Cardinal outfielder are older. You know, with Beltran and Holiday, there's a chance he could crack the lineup. And I got a feeling if he does crack the lineup at some point, it's going to be really hard to send him back down.
Right. I'll tell you what. With this year's crop of prospects, I mean, you can't really expect a Mike Trout with anybody. But if there is one guy who's close, it's going to be Tavares. His bat is most advanced of anybody's, more advanced than Will Myers, more advanced than Jurickson Profar, so he's not really a wait-in-progress guy. If there's an opportunity, if Beltran's knees start barking and they need a right fielder, Tavares will step in immediately, and I think he could offer better production, or as good a production as John Jay is right now. So Tavares is a really exciting guy. He should be drafted in mixed league. He's a draft and stash guy for sure.
All right. Thanks a lot, Scott. We appreciate it. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Nick.
The Daily Fantasy Sports Report.
Brought to you by DraftKings.com. And, of course, you can follow them at DraftKings on Twitter. So I started messing around with DraftKings.com over the weekend. Now, my original intention was to wait until baseball started, but I kind of felt like a kid at Christmas. You know, I just wanted to unwrap the gifts. So what I did was I logged on, and it was really easy. I've used sites like this before, but this was the easiest to register. I created a username, which is Podcast Kings. So if you're ever playing or you want to track me, you can always find me at Podcast Kings. Put in a password, then just put in a credit card number, and from there you can go ahead and just start playing in the games. Now, again, it was an easy setup, and there's a ton of contests, and that's what was really cool about this. Because you know what? Maybe you want to play for $2 to get in, or maybe you want to play for $200 or something in between. There was a lot of options. Now, I played basketball on Saturday night. I don't follow hoops very closely, and I definitely don't play fantasy basketball. But I did pretty good considering. I made one blunder. I started Paul Millsap, but didn't realize he was out. Had he played, or had I been able to substitute him, which I could have done up until the last minute, I just missed it. I just spaced on that. There was a chance that I could have, I think, finished in the top 10 the first time I ever played. So that was pretty cool. But then Sunday, I played hockey. Now, I don't play fantasy hockey, and I kind of follow the NHL. Just don't tell anyone that, though, because they'll revoke my Canadian passport. But after watching the U.S. crush Canada in the World Baseball Classic, I needed to feel a little patriotic, so I decided to get into a game. Now, I have a sense of players in the NHL, but my fantasy skills really came out here. I thought the Pittsburgh-New York Islander, as well as the Chicago-Edmonton game, were going to be high-scoring. So I loaded up on those players, and lo and behold, I finished fifth. For real, I finished in the money. I won money. Not bad for my first time really playing, so I was pretty excited about that. I'm actually really excited to see what I can do when baseball season starts, especially if I'm using Rudy's tools at Razzball.com. Last week, we talked about dollar values based on start, which starts with the Streaminator. With that kind of dead, accurate intel, I got a feeling I can clean up this year at DraftKings.com. Also, in a few weeks, we're going to run some Razzball contests at DraftKings.com, so you'll be able to go up against the Razzball team, including Rudy and myself, and show us what you tell your friends in an alcohol-induced stupor is true. You know more about fantasy than us.
The Razzball Podcast.
All right, let's get our man Rudy Gamble on the line. You can always follow him on Twitter at
Rudy Gamble. Hi, Rudy.
What's up, Nick?
How you doing, buddy?
Doing well. It's South by Southwest time here in Austin, so things are going crazy.
You know, it's funny you bring that up. I actually wanted to bring up music with you today if we had an opportunity, and I was thinking on the drive in, I'm like, I wonder when the South by Southwest Festival is. So are there any Canadian bands you want to go and slag down there right now?
I think I might have to pass this year because I'm going to be focusing on all the Razzball work. But the biggest news is that Prince is going to be playing like a show that I guess 1,000 people will get to go to.
Oh, that's actually kind of
interesting. It's going to be, it's roughly like one person, or 10 people for every one band member. He's got like a 20-person band.
Hey, actually, you know what we started with today, and we'll have one for you hopefully next week. We're going to start asking personal questions of Gray and Rudy, so.
Oh, right on.
So be prepared, all right?
Okay.
All right, listen, I want to start off by talking about the Hittertron. I know last week you took us through how the Streaminator works, and it's going to be a lot more effective for guys like myself this year. And I know the Hittertron's not quite ready yet, but talk to me a little bit about how it's going to work and how it's going to benefit someone playing in a roto league.
Okay, so, you know, streaming pitchers has been a more common practice because pitchers only pitch every 5 days, and so they annoy us for the other 4 days. You know, they're sitting there on the bench taking up the space. Hitters, you know, there's only so many that are playing every day, and so we're more used to letting hitters just sit in your lineup. The more research you do, the more you see that that's great for some hitters, but others you really want to cycle in and out, and that streaming hitters could be an area where you kind of gain advantage, where people are getting used to streaming pitchers, and we're going to help, I think, make it a smarter practice and should increase the usage. I think the hitters is going to be a key advantage area this year. If you're like a money ball aficionado, that could be the market efficiency.
And, you know, it's funny, too, because we do kind of set and forget our starting lineup. So we don't really, you know, we're definitely looking at pitchers when it comes to streaming. So it's going to be interesting. I don't even think I've ever seen a tool that helps with gauging hitters for a certain period of time.
So I'll say the stats you're going to see are going to be less satisfying initially than the pitchers, only because I could say a pitcher is going to throw 6 innings and 3 earned runs. You're like, okay, I get that. For a hitter, you're going to see things like, well, I think there's 0.15 homers
right,
and 0.4 runs. But it'll all get translated into a dollar figure.
Okay, that makes sense.
So you'll be able to look at it. And to me, two of the areas where I'm seeing, just in the modeling, where there's going to be advantages are, one, platoon players. Both, you know, looking at guys like, not a spoiler alert, guys like Shin-Soo Choo and Joe Mauer are really bad against lefties.
Right.
That could be an area where you want to sit them game day if they're facing a lefty, especially a tough one. And I think Chu's going to get sit against lefties a little more likely than he was in Cleveland. The second is looking at the home park.
Right.
Last year I did really well basically riding Chris Nelson and Jordan Pacheco when they played in Colorado. It wasn't as much the homers. It was just the average hitter, I think, hits like 300 in Colorado. You put anyone in, they're hitting 300, and they're getting the runs in RBIs.
Well, that's going to definitely be something to look at. Also, too, not to harp on it, but that's going to help when you're playing at DraftKings.com.
Huge.
By the way, I played hockey yesterday. I finished fifth. I finished in the money. My first time playing hockey. I don't even follow hockey.
It's in your blood.
I know. I'm the only Canadian who will take a baseball or football game ahead of hockey. Just don't tell anyone that, okay?
Will do.
It's a tough country to get through if you make crazy statements like that. Hey, speaking of crazy statements, last week Gray made a really bold statement saying that Aroldis Chapman, if everything breaks right, could have the biggest starting pitcher season in 15 years. I think it's going to be interesting to watch, but give me a big shot, someone you're really big on this year, that whether there's buzz on him or not, but someone that you really like going into 2013.
So the guy who just shoots off of my ratings is Anthony Rizzo. I'm basing mine on Steamer and Cairo projections, and I've looked at some of the others like Zips, and everyone loves Anthony Rizzo. He projects as a top 30 player even at first base. So obviously there's a little bit of you take a little bit of the value out because first base is pretty deep. He's going in the seventh round. I got him in the seventh round in a 15-team league. I think he's about 2 or 3 rounds late. I wonder if some of it's the Hosmer effect.
Right.
Because both Hosmer and Rizzo had good partial rookie years. But where Hosmer had a lot of hype going in last year and was a fourth round pick. I feel like Rizzo's falling. I think there's a 290, 30 homer, 100 RBI season. And it's so rare to get a discount. I would say it's so rare to get a discount at first base. It's always a position because it's quality bats that seems to go at high prices.
If that's the upside, what's the downside of Rizzo this year?
I mean, I think maybe something like a 270, 2080. Yeah, I mean, he's shown power, he's shown discipline. His strikeout rate's fairly controlled. So I think at worst he gives you like a solid year. I mean, the upside could be greater than 290, 30, 100. But that's right now what I'm considering like, you know, a fairly realistic upside. And I could see he'd be a top five first baseman.
At worst, he's a corner man, and top five first baseman's the upside. And, you know, I know you guys don't agree with me, but I don't think first base is that deep this year, at least, you know, the way I'm looking at it. So a flyer like Rizzo could be worth taking.
I think that's impacted some of my rankings as well. I think that and outfield are positions where I would go with – I'd throw position scarcity out and just get good bats. Because as the, you know, you get later in drafts and you realize, yeah, the corner infield selections and the outfield selections aren't that great.
Okay, so now give me someone that everyone else is high on that you're not so much.
I'm always sensitive toward guys that look like they had a career year, that everything broke the right way. And I feel like last year that was Chase Headley. I don't know how you could lead the league in RBIs on the Padres. I'm sure he was clutch and all that stuff, but, yeah, I mean, you could be a great offensive player and have a great season and still end up with just 80 RBIs and like 70 runs playing in Petco with that offense. So I'm seeing him draft in the top 40. I don't like him till like 70. You know, again, I hate that offense. I hate that park. He hit more homers last year than the previous 3 years combined. So he made a power, you know, let's just say he has more power. I see 20 homers a lot more likely than 30 homers.
What about, how do you factor in them bringing the fences in at Petco? And I'll also throw Safeco into that because do those doubles become homers? I don't know how to factor that.
Well, for San Diego, they're moving in right center from 400 to 390. You know, that's still brutal for right center. So I still see it as a negative. Maybe that leads to another homer or two, but I think if Headley's kind of due for a greater regression than most. So I think, and if he hits, let's say, 280, 2080, and he steals some bases, it's like he's better than Mike Moustakas, but not 10 rounds better. So third base is just a position I typically want a better player, a Longoria, Zimmerman, who have, to me, shown a more consistent skill set, or I'm punting and run it, you know, trying a Moustakas, hoping a guy like Frazier comes to me in free agency. I think Headley's just inflated right now.
And I'll ask this, I know you just answered it, but you would rather have Headley than Moustakas, correct?
Yeah, it's just, I think Moustakas will end up being a better value.
How big is that gap?
Maybe like 4 or 5 rounds. I think the biggest driver for it is stolen bases and a little bit on average.
Listen, I got you for a couple more minutes here. Throw me some quick roto drafting tips. We're going right into the draft season. You know, I know the Razzball universe, we play a lot of different versions of the game, but give me some specific roto tips.
Definitely. I think one of the challenges, you know, in people looking for tips, some of the questions we get is always, give me something that's a hard and fast rule. And to me, the only hard and fast rule is you shouldn't go in with an overly rigid plan. I don't, you know, maybe something that says I'm not going to take a pitcher in the first round, that I get, you could prepare for that. Otherwise, I just say take what the draft room gives you. I don't worry about trying to take the top guy on my board every time. I know that, I mean, if anyone looks at my rankings, you'll see, like, guys whose ADP is significantly less, like, you know, Rizzo, I think Adam Jones, BJ Upton are all like 30 picks higher on my board, so I'll wait on them. If I'm seeing a lump of players available that I like and I don't distinguish, let's say 3 outfielders I like, but only 1 third baseman, I'm taking the third baseman even if I'm going further down in the rankings. I'm just trying to get the most optimal team that I can get. So I like my rankings, but I'll definitely, you know, move down, up and down them during a draft, looking at ADP and just trying to understand what's going to be left next time, you know, once the turn comes back to me? And so, you know, I think you always have to react to that. And, you know, you can't, I don't think it's saying a statement like, you know, I'm not going to take a closer till X round. It's not, to me, that's unhelpful. To me, it's, I'm not going to take a closer until the room tells me the closer run's coming.
Right. That's perfect, because that leads me into my next question. I know you sometimes like to get a big stud pitcher early, but let's say out of your top 10 picks, how many of those are bats? How many of those are pitchers, if any?
I have changed. I think last year was a pivotal year with Streaminator, so I'm not as key on that. In some expert leagues, you know, I try to make sure I get one in the first four rounds, just because I don't want to. I don't want to be in need. I hate to be behind the eight ball and have to take a pitcher when maybe there's not good value on the board. This year, two starting pitchers is probably where I am after 10 rounds, and if I can make it, no relievers. I'm going much heavier on the bats this year.
Right.
So to me, a starting pitcher in the third, fourth round, and then another one in the eighth or ninth round, depends if there's a good value. Like Sabathia falls, I'd like to take him maybe in the sixth or seventh. And then relievers, I'm trying to wait it out, and it really depends on the draft. But I don't want to be – I want two guys in the middle tier, the Hollins, Willemsons, that type. I don't want to need my second or third closer and looking at Marmol and the disaster that's the Detroit Tiger situation right now.
Okay, that's fair enough. Listen, Rudy, thanks for joining us today. Also, I just want to tell you what we're going to try and do, because it's, you know, the second podcast of the season. We're still working everything out. We're going to try and get you and Gray on at the same time next week. Do a little fireside chat, if you will. See if we can make that work. But it's always great having you on board with us. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
The Razzball Podcast.
All right, now we're pleased to be joined by Gray Albright. You can follow him at Razzball. I guess that means you're the man when the whole company name is just your Twitter handle, right, Gray?
I'm a company man. I have people under me who are fetching me coffee and bringing me slippers.
I was actually going to ask, because it doesn't sound like you've had your coffee yet today.
No, I skipped coffee and went straight to the Devil's Dandruff today.
You know what? I'm just going to leave that out.
I'm flying. I'm like a butterfly. I'm hovering above my chair right now. I'm not sitting.
With a big smile on your face. All right, listen, let's get right into some baseball chat here, Gray. We talked last week about Aroldis Chapman. That was one of the big calls you had. I know there's some for other positions, but what I want from you right now is someone who everyone else is high on that you're just hating.
I got a name for you, Buster Posey. Everyone seems to love this guy. Blue Horseshoe loves Buster Posey. I'd rather have sex with your bald spot than draft Posey in the second round. You feel me, Nick?
Dude, why you got to bring my bald spot into this?
I feel like it was a compliment because I said I'd rather have sex with your bald spot. So I would prefer to have sex with your bald spot over drafting Posey. So you're above your bald spot's above Posey.
Don't even know what to make of that.
Maybe my logic was off. Anyway, everyone screams position scarcity with Posey. Oh, he's a catcher. Now all I need is a first baseman, second baseman, shortstop, corner, middle, nine pitchers, five outfielders, and a utility guy. Or maybe two utility guys. My team is set. Yeah, okay. And you're losing your league. Not you, but you in the royal sense. Not you in the royal sense like when you go to Burger King and you wear your kid's little crown. No, I'm talking, Posey just had an MVP year last year, okay? So let's assume he has an MVP year again this year, which is really stupid to think, but let's assume he does. He wasn't even a top 25 player last year for fantasy. Why would we draft him in the top 25 if he just had his career year and he still wasn't that good for fantasy? He's great for real baseball, not for fantasy. All right, move on. My blood's boiling.
All right, let me just ask you, though. We're assuming you're in a mock draft by yourself. What round would you take Buster Posey? I'm just trying to get a comparison.
Okay, so let's assume I am drafting with 11 other me's. I'd probably take him in the fourth round.
Okay. All right. So we're not that far off, but I understand the first few rounds is where you really got to get a big bat, like you said, too, especially in the post-steroid era.
Yeah.
All right. So listen, we're kind of just getting into the beginning of draft season here. So I want to discuss some of the expert drafts you've been in so far this year and what some of the trends are that you might be seeing.
Some of the things I'm seeing in the drafts are there's a lot of fat guys who need breath mints. Another trend I'm seeing is high-waisted pants. Those are two big trends that I'm seeing with fantasy baseball experts this year. I don't know. Maybe they just got out of shape in the offseason.
Yeah, maybe this offseason.
Yeah. Oh, you mean like trends with drafts, like how they're drafting rather than what they actually look like.
Yeah, but I kind of like your breakdown of it.
Yeah, high-waisted pants. That's what I'm seeing a lot of this year.
So what, you're drafting in Palm Springs?
It's like, you know what the you have buyers from department stores go to Milan to see what people are seeing this year, and you have editors from fashion magazines. I go to fantasy draft and I look to see what are the new trends for fantasy baseball experts. And the big trend this year is high-waisted pants.
From which store?
Short and round.
I thought they would just take their Snuggies and cut them and put a waistband around it.
Actually, I'm seeing, I've been in four drafts so far, and I haven't seen too much of Stars and Scrubs. And for those who don't know what Stars and Scrubs are, it's when you draft, say, five players using about $180 of your $260, and then you only have, you know, you have like maybe $80 or something for the next 20 players. So you end up with a team of like half all-stars, and not even half, like maybe seven all-stars, and the rest are crap, which is really bad. I haven't seen that. I saw that a lot in the past years. I haven't seen that much in this year, which is a good sign, because there's a lot of people like Stars and Scrubs is a terrible way to go, in my opinion. So the fact that I haven't seen it means people are smartening up, which is good.
Okay, good. And you've done four drafts so far.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this. I just asked Rudy the same question. In your top 10 picks this year, what's the breakdown? Is it seven hitters, eight hitters, nine hitters? I'm assuming there's no closer yet, obviously, but you tell me.
In my first 10 rounds, I'll have at least, this is for 12 team, right?
Yeah.
Okay. In 12 teams, so you're looking at 1 to 120.
Yes.
I'd say there's probably two pitchers and starting to look at a catcher or a closer. It obviously depends on value. If someone like, the aforementioned Posey were to fall into the fifth round, then it's like, yeah, I'm not refusing that kind of value, but yeah, on average, I would say there's probably two starters looking at a closer and possibly a catcher.
Okay, now you've only drafted in four leagues so far, so this isn't really a broad representation, right?
No. Yeah, no. In general, I say closers are between 100 and 120. And catchers are between 120 and 160. This is obviously all very, like, you know, depends. Like, it depends on where guys are falling, how things are playing out. There's no really set way to say, okay, my first 10 picks, I want six outfielders, two infielders, and a starter and a reliever. You know, it's really no way to do it like that, but it's around those values.
And do you think these trends, for example, less stars and scrubs, is going to start to appear in most people's drafts? Do you think they'll stay current with the experts based on what the experts are putting out?
I hope so, because people seem to be drafting smarter. If people want to draft dumber, then that's on them. You can only put up the don't walk sign. You can't stand on every corner telling people not to walk. I sound like a fortune cookie in bed.
Hey, speaking of in bed, I've been asked a lot recently if Gray could give some advice on how to score a cougar. Now, not, you know, to say, hey, look, everyone should be aiming for a cougar, but I'm just curious how you snagged yourself a lovely let's say, more mature woman?
Of course. See, the first thing to score your very own cougar, you have to speak their language. Hey, baby, you want to watch 60 Minutes? So, cougars love CBS, 60 Minutes specifically, not like the ocean. Second, don't offer them chewy candy. You want to pull their caps out? Well, maybe you want to get their teeth out like the landlady in Kingpin, but no chewy candy. Hard candy or bust. That could be the bumper sticker on my Mercury Cougar. Third, conversation with them is a breeze. Their hearing is going, so just nod and move your lips. They'll think you're attentive.
And that's Gray's dating advice for scoring cougars. With that, Gray, I got nothing left for you, buddy. What else can I say?
You're welcome.
All right, thanks, Gray.
The Razzball Podcast.
Thanks so much for joining us today. We will be back again next week. We will try to get Gray and Rudy on at the same time if the technical gods here permit. But again, thanks for joining us. You can always check us out at razzball.com, and you can follow me at Nick Capozzi, N-I-C-K-C-A-P-O-Z-Z-I. Talk to you next week.